Today is Sunday, April 23rd, 2023, and while the world is shaking around us, and the big debate is whether to appear at the ceremonies on Yom HaZikaron, it's just frightening the low level of our politicians, Lapid leading the group. So far he refuses to appear, the leader of the opposition. For him, better no state of Israel than a state that will have some Jewish content. All right, we have a lot that we have to correct. The great challenge, I spoke about it Friday morning. I hope my words hit home. Let me say Shavua Tov to those in front of me and to everyone on the screen already. And I want to begin with a beautiful story that was told to me. Rabbi Yehoshua Grinstein, my dear Talmud, was at the funeral of Lo Aleinu, the two sisters, Maya and Rina. And at the funeral, which was Chol HaMoed, a Ger HaChassid was standing next to me with his full Chol HaMoed uniform, spodek, shtreimel, etc. Knowing a bit of Yiddish, I approached him, and I repeat the conversation word for word. Was venim kumt der Yid? From venim, where does this Jew come from? And he answers, Arad. And he says, are you a relative? Yehoshua asked the Ger HaChassid, are you a relative of the family? And he says, I'll read the translation. No, I rented a car in order to have a good time in Chol HaMoed. But how can I, when Jews are being killed and a family suffers? I took the car and came right here to the funeral. I don't think that needs any comment. I want to mention, I was talking on the Monday class about Rav Meir Shapiro and the yeshiva in Detroit, and I mentioned the wrong name. I don't want to, it's a similar name. That letter was sent to me by Rabbi Moshe Katz of Chicago. And it's his grandfather who never believed there'd be a yeshiva, and his grandson winds up studying in it. Regarding Rabbi Gustman, who I spoke about, I forget already, the Sunday class, the Monday class, but he was an extraordinary person, and Rabbi Moshe Katz writes to me about him that his brother was a Talmud of Rabbi Gustman, and he asked his brother, there was a simcha, and he wanted to invite a Rebbetzin who was widowed. A Rebbetzin, a widow of a great Talmud Chacham, Mira Resh Yeshiva. And he asked his Talmud, find out for me what type of widow she is. And he looked at Rabbi Gustman, what do you mean? And he said, look, there's some widows, when they're invited to an affair, they feel very bad because they know they're just being invited because of their husband and he's no longer here. Or no, there are other widows who are happy to be invited, that they're remembered and recalled and the family is not forgotten. Find out what type of widow she is and I'll know whether I should invite her or not. And that's Rabbi Gustman. The Elichkeit was indescribable. And he also, this Talmud tells the story with Rabbi Gustman that if there were women sitting at the table, he cautioned this Talmidim not to speak in learning. The conversation should be something that they too can participate. Today, said, we live in a world where it could very well be the women can participate in learning more than the men. But this was years ago in Rabbi Gustman's lifetime. And it tells more stories, beautiful, about who Rabbi Gustman was. I just want to mention again, I suffer from the world that is a world of half-truths and lies. And I want to mention this because I have a Talmud listening in Atlanta, Georgia. And the person who wrote this was his chavruta when he learned in Chafetz Chaim. Maybe you can speak to Rabbi Hoffman, Yair Hoffman. He writes about Rebbetzin Vruria David. Rebbetzin Vruria David was the daughter, the only child of Rav Huttner. She was my wife, David in Hebrew, David in English, okay. And She was my wife's classmate in Hunter. Why did she go to Hunter? My wife explained to me, because Hunter was all women that danced, and they went downtown, and all the Frum girls ate together. So my wife knew Breuer. Now, she did a brilliant doctorate on Rav Tzvi Hirsch Chayot. That doctorate is right there in that file cabinet. You can. It was never published. And I don't know how we... academically, she studied one of the Achronim found in the back of the Gemara, and to anyone who reads her work on the topic, she clearly but silently compares that Achron to the manner in which her own father met the topic, and one can see her sheer admiration for her father in that. Rabbi Dr. Mark, do you understand one word of what I read? I'm very happy because I said this in class. Years ago, I spoke about her doctorate of Tzias Chayat, and I said, I have a feeling she's writing about her own father. It's a brilliant doctorate. How do you make a fool out of her? She studied Rav Tzias Chayat, the Haggaz of his in back of the Vilna Shas, correct? State that she studied his life, did a doctorate at Columbia U, and cry that the doctorate has not been published. You follow me? But wow, and then there's a line here, Rakefet has said time and again, two biographies have never been published by Art Scroll. No? Rabbi Aaron Cutler and Rabbi Yitzchak Kuttner. And their reasons why, Zev, because they're facts in their life that Art Scroll cannot leave out because too many people know. And on the other hand, Art Scroll could publish that Rav Aaron Cutler was getting on the train to go to Moscow to study at the university, to publish that Rav Hutner was a great admirer of Rav Kook in his youth, etc., etc. So she writes, he writes, any attempt at a biography of her father or a video about him was denied because it would have not been MS. It could not be because of his sheer greatness. My dear Talmidim, do you mean to say my work on Revel and Silver and the Rav, the biographical part of the Rav? You have to write a biography. You have to write a biography. Write an honest biography. Write the way you understand. Fine, if you're honest, intellectually honest. But imagine what an insult that is, that their biographies on Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, what, they were not Anshei Emes? Wow, people, the perversion of the Fadobnkeit that I spoke about Friday morning in Beit Shemesh, it's frightening. And let me just, before I begin, let me just say thank you to the Beit Shemesh community. I stand in awe of Rabbi Brian Thor. When he does something, he does something. And I was very moved by the crowd on a Friday morning and very moved the reception for Rebbe by Talmidim from the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s. Ashreinu Shesachinu. Okay, now let's get to work. Today's shiur, very fascinating. Zev, what we're talking about, we're dealing here. This is a class that began in 1978. It's ongoing. And we've dealt with responsible literature. I have a new student that I greatly value, and I just want to give him a drop of background, because there are people listening here that have been with me 10, 20, 30, 40 years. And Mark, how many years? Almost 50 already. So Zev, we're dealing with the question of a woman, whether she can be a mashgiach kashrut. And Rav Menashe Kleinger says this question from Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein's answer has colored all subsequent conversation on this topic, because Rav Moshe Feinstein says, what's the question? They're worried that the Rambam, and these are all what I've cited, you can pick it up in YU Torah, Melech Velo Malka, Srara, that a woman cannot have a position of responsibility where she bosses people around. So Rav Moshe says, let the Hashgacha, the rabbi hires her. She is not the boss. She is just fulfilling what the rabbi says. That's not Srara. And subsequently, all the discussion that we have about this topic goes back to Rav Moshe's Eitzer, and here in Israel, as I showed you last week with Tzomet and Tzoha, and in America, the OU and Rabbi Heinemann. Today, you give classes in Kashrut, women attend. When they're appointed, they're working for the OU, they're working for the rabbis who are the overseers of the whole Kashrut situation. So that problem is ameliorated. But now I want to go further, and I want to deal with a very interesting question. And I'm very privileged because it works out right as I spoke on Friday on the Rav's 30th Yahrzeit, one of the speakers. You'll see the Rav Gadluto. But let's begin at the beginning. I'm citing Igret Moshe, Yoredeya, Yoredeya Chelik Rivi'i. It's the fourth time we dealt with the Igret Moshe. This volume was published after Rav Moshe was dead. Now, this was already put out by his grandchildren, etc. 1996. And we're dealing with Siman Chaf Vav. And it's a tshuva from 1985. That's the end of Rav Moshe's life. And Rav Moshe says at the start, my grandson, Reb Mordechai, brought me the question. Unfortunately, I cannot write. My health is not good. But I am dictating to him a quick answer because I see what an important question this is. And what's the question? And this is fascinating. Imagine you have a ger. And over the decades I've taught, many students went on to become rabbanim. You have someone who's a ger. And he becomes, it's a big Talmud Chacham. If I can speak a little Yiddish, a hata Yiddish cup. That Elliot, welcome back. Ah, good to see you. Elliot Rosner has just come in. Wow, I got the half of America here today. And the ger hata gutta cup, and he becomes a Rav, a Rosh Yeshiva. Tell me, according to the Rambam, can you make him a Rav? Can you make him a Rosh Yeshiva? Melech v'lo Malka? And as the Rambam says, no position at all. You can't appoint him to anything. And this is the Rambam that we dealt with last week in Rav Moshe. And is the Rambam correct? Isn't he correct? What is the source of the Rambam? And here you have a ger, and you want to elect him your rabbi, you want to appoint him a Rosh Yeshiva. Well, what do you say? And here the question intensifies. Go back to the Shulshelet HaKabbalah, Shmaya Vavtalion. Doesn't the Gemara state clearly that they were gerim? Isn't that the tradition? Many Gemaras, the Rebbeim of Hillel, Shammai, Shmaya Vavtalion, their Talmidim repeated their incorrect Hebrew, right or wrong, and everything out of covered. And here you have Shmaya Vavtalion. So how could they? This was not just a plain rabbi, a plain market share. This was the Nasi and the Av Beit Din. And here the Gemara takes for granted that they were Gerim. And can you appoint them? Can't you appoint them? And this is the question that Rav Moshe receives. So he tells his grandson Rav Mordechai, first of all, in relation to Gerim, I need not elaborate, we have to go out of our way to be upright, decent, encouraging, friendly to Gerim. How many times does the Torah tell us, V'ahavta et hager ki Gerim hayita? Next week we'll have it in the Torah reading, next Shabbat, Be'ezrat Hashem, a ger. And Chazal have this attitude. B'mokim kashin geirim li Yisrael kesapachat. That geirim are difficult for the Jews. It's like a plague. So what's the pshat? And the basic pshat you see in Tosfot, and it's, believe me, I've been through life, this pshat is 100% correct. You see geirim, they become tzaddikim. They're makpid midakdek in every mitzvah. No, look at the Jews. How many Jews are midakdek in every mitzvah? How many Jews are properly shomer Shabbos? How many Jews kashrut? That's the pshat. Kashim geirim li Yisrael kesapachat. That, look at the Jew. What's your excuse? You were born Jewish. You had a good chinuch from the age of 2 on. And this gear makes you look like a noisvaf, a non-honest Torah Jew, etc. So Rav Meisha says we have to go out of our way to be disintegrated. So now, which may have avtalion, but melech v'lo malka, the Rambam, he quotes the Gemara, where the Gemara says that even to put the ger in charge of measurements, to see that they're the proper measurements, even that a ger can't do. And here, you're taking them and making them nasi v'av beitin. Okay. So Rav Meisha says as follows, that it could be that at times we have no one better, and it's what we call a hora'at sha'ah. It's a compromise with the reality at that moment in time. Mark, give me an example. Devorah HaNeviyah. Here, you take a look, Devorah HaNeviyah. She led the people. We have examples, women who were malkah, that they ruled the Jewish people, and at the Gerim period, between children. So you see, there is a Horat Sha'ah. There is a concept in relation to Devorah HaNeviyah, and it comes down in a number of different circumstances. There is a concept of Kiblu Aleihem. In other words, if you heard what went on a few years ago, Rabbi Riskin proposed, and I think he planned to start a school, that women could be Dayanot. And there was an outcry against him, and Rabbi Riskin based it upon the Devorah, Kiblu Aleihem. And I don't want to go into great detail here, because it's not that I agree with Rabbi Riskin, but he said something that perhaps can be discussed within the context of halacha. And Reb Moshe says here, Kiblu Aleihem, that it was Horat Shah, these were brilliant people, we needed them, we didn't want to lose them, no one was their equal. And Rav Moshe says, wait a minute, who says that their mothers weren't Jewish? And he quotes a Gemara where the Gemara talks about an Amora, and it mentions his mother, not his father, because the father was a Ger, but his mother was Jewish. So what do you mean, Gerim? Maybe it was the father who was the Ger, the mothers were Jewish, therefore the children were Jewish. And Reb Moshe, his quotes here, the original tshuva. In this tshuva, he quotes everything we spoke about the last few weeks with a woman being a mashgiach. And he says, but that's less of a question, because there I had the concept they could work for the rabbi. It's not that they're the boss. The rabbi's the boss. They're just following his orders. But here, when Shmaya Ve'Avtalion get up to give his shiur, they're not following anyone's orders. They're giving the shiur. They're the Rosh Yeshiva. Everyone is standing up for them. Everyone is giving them respect. All right. This is the question. And maybe it was Horat Shah. Then he quotes his grandson, that his grandson answered, because of their gadlut, no one appointed them. It just was by self-acclamation that they're the giants of the generation. And I can give you an analogy. One time the Rav asked us this. I went into the Shia 57. I'm a product of the 50s. But about 59, 60, it's not 60, it's 59 probably, there was a blonde kid sitting in back who really was not officially in the Shia, but he was sneaking in all the time. So one time the Rav, in a playful mood after Shia, said, who are the good boys in the Shia? Who are the Leil Lamdanim? And, you know, there were names well known, and we say, Rebbe, that little blonde kid sitting there, he's better than any of us. What? What's his name? Heschel Schachter. That's his name. And the Rav, you know, I think that was the first time the Rav really heard his name. But you see, he didn't need an appointment. He was top quality. And that's what Mordechai is saying about the Shmaya Vavtalion. Who said they were appointed? Who said it's a melech, v'lo malkah? Everyone knew. Turn to them. All right. So Rav Meisher's matir, and even if you want to argue with him about a mashkicha, but the fact that Shmaya Vavtalion and Gerim, and you have to be nice to them. All right, this was what Rav Moshe answered. Now let me take you to a famous moment in Torah history in the 20th century. And I'll just scratch the surface because this machloket shook up the greater YU world. One of the greatest problems we have is the problem of a man refusing to give a get. There are problems we have which we have no control over. For the sake of argument, the classic problem of Aguna, which so much has been written about, a man gets on a plane, the plane crashes, they never find any bodies, can the woman remarry? Boats going to America in the 1800s, or going to South Africa, a number of times the boats went under. They just found what did I read today? They found a major boat, I think it was Japanese, carrying captured Americans, etc. The boat went down, and they found the boat with over 1,000 bodies, but they're not going to take the bodies out. They're going to let them stay. It may be I'm mixed up with Japanese. It could be it's part of World War I I'm talking about. But imagine a plane goes down in the ocean and you have no bodies whatsoever. This is a classic problem of Aguna. And it's not a problem we create. It's a problem because we're human beings. We live in the world. God made the world this way. Planes crash. Boats sink. Bodies are not recovered. All right, can she remarry or can't she remarry? All right, Natan, well-known question. Rakav Aaron Chelik Gimbel, hundreds of pages are devoted to this issue. But there's more. There's a problem we create in our contemporary society. A lady wants a get, fine, I'll give it to her for $100,000. And that's money, money, money. And this problem haunts us. So you all know Rabbi Rachman came up with the idea of Hafkat Kedushin. Hafkat Kedushin, retroactive annulment of marriage, does exist in the Gemara. under confined, circumscribed cases. Again, I refer you to Rakaf Aharon Chelek Gimel. But here, a woman, it was a normal marriage. It was a seemingly good marriage. Suddenly something went wrong. And the man wants to be paid for the get. No? Do we have a solution? And Rabbi Rachman came up. Hafkat Kedushin, a Beis Din was established in Queens. And if you could show that, for the sake of argument, had you known the man would hold you up and be so cruel, you never would have agreed to marry him. Mekach Ta'ut, retroactive annulment. You were never married, therefore you don't need a get, therefore you can remarry. And this essentially, on a very popular level, is what that proposal was made, and it was identified with Rabbi Rachman. 1975, and here the world, everyone quotes this and says it was at the RCA. Zeb, you know what all these terms, RCA, Rabbinical Council of America? It was not at the RCA. It was Yeshiva University Rabbinical Alumni, YURA, in First Hall. Again, I was living in Israel, but I know all this intimately because Manny Holzer, my dear friend, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, afterwards he gave me a tape of everything that happened and told me the whole story eye to eye. So the Rav announced he would speak for the RCA, for the YURA, on the question of Geirut. That's what it was titled. When the Rav came in, he probably was going to speak on Geirut, but he was very agitated because the Rabbi Rachman, his proposal, it now was on the front page. Everyone was talking about it. And he begins, I have a very unpleasant task to do, and he says he takes issue with Rabbi Rachman 100%. He's cutting the branches of the very tree on which he sits. In other words, Torah Mesorah. And how can you come up with this massive concept of Hafkat Kedushin Lemafreya to solve all these man-made problems? And of course, halachically, either we surrender or you're not observing halacha. When we surrender, we can't come along suddenly and throw out thousands and thousands of pages of Shas and Paiskim, tens of thousands of responsive literature, and suddenly we're smarter than anyone. It doesn't go that way. So the Rav criticized very strongly Rabbi Rachman. Manny Holzer told me, Rabbi Holzer, it's a name you don't know, but at that moment in time, there was no one closer to the Rav than Rabbi Emanuel Holzer, in New York at least, in Boston. All right, Lubavitz, but in New York it was Manny Holzer. And Manny tells me he was sitting there looking at the Rav and going like this, shaking his head back and forth. Rebbe, do you know what you're getting into? No, no, no. But the Rav went on and on. He didn't pay attention to Manny. And it turned into a major conflict that so much has been written about. You have no idea. And some of it is, I laugh, it's now a third, fourth generation writing about the Rav. A lady came to me, was doing a doctorate at Hebrew U, and she was convinced that the Rav changed his mind on this topic. She was quoting Emanuel Rachman years later, and she was convinced that the Rav changed his mind. And I couldn't convince her otherwise. I said, I spoke with the Rav afterwards in the 70s, the 80s. He didn't change his mind. He just didn't want to hurt Rabbi Rachman anymore. So he toned down a little. But I couldn't convince her. But in this talk, when he finished, and it turned out, if you hear the shir, and the shir is available in YU Torah, I believe, if you hear the shir, three-quarters of the shir is the Rav's critique of Rabbi Rachman. Then he remembers he was supposed to talk about Geirut, and he talks about Geirut. And here you see the Rav's genius. He raised the same issue. Shmaya v'Avtalyan. How could they be Nasi v'Av Beitin? Melech v'lo Malka. exactly the question that Rav Moshe has, the Rav raises the very issue. And he gives a totally different answer. And the answer, when you hear the answer, it is so logical and so simple, it solves all halachic problems. The Rav said like this, when it comes to knowledge of Torah, there's no limit. Any human being can have a great knowledge of Torah. And remember, these were Gerim, Jews, Medadik v'mitzvot, Kala Chamura, and learned people. There was no one in the generation who equaled them. So the Rav said, when the Sanhedrin had a question and they're going through all the issues, anyone who has knowledge, participate. Share your knowledge. Enhance us with your learning. Later, when it came to a vote, they excused themselves. We can't vote. That's Svara. We're Gerim. That's what the Rav said. Shmaya v'avtalyum, their knowledge, we need it, 1,000%. After they spoke, after they enlightened the 71 Chaverim of the Sanhedrin, when it came to a vote, they excused themselves. That's, to me, a beautiful, beautiful answer. But halacha l'maisa, this tshuva of Rav Moshe, mashgichat kashrut, this tshuva comes back time and time again. We cite it, agree with it, try to apply it elsewhere. Mashgichat kashrut today, problem solved. They're part of the rabbinate. Tzohar's giving the hashgacha. The chief rabbinate is giving the hashgacha. They set the rules and regulations. But believe me, in the year 2024, life has taught me you can depend more on a woman when it comes to kashrut than a man. And I'm a perfect example. My wife goes crazy, Pesach, and I tantalize her. Honey, if I spring breadcrumbs on the floor, can we make the Seder at the table? And she looks at me like a Shagetz that stepped off Mars. But Venus, they've cleaned the breadcrumbs off the floor. Purim don't count. But a woman is a woman. Okay, that's one citation of Reb Moshe. Mark, now we come to Chicago. A young man, is an amazing story. Actually, I would love to see a full-length biography about him. Harav George or Gedalia Schwartz. The Schwartz brothers, the Schwartz family. They grew up in Newark. It's very interesting. I have an emotional connection to a number of cities. I think second to New York is Newark, because that was my second rabbinate, or the rabbinate that I succeeded in, and a rabbinate that built me as a human being. I came there 62, was there till the day we got on the boat, June of 69. Maplewood, South Orange, we were, if you know Newark, you walk across Springfield Avenue, I think it is, the next minute you're in Maplewood. It's adjacent to Newark, and Maplewood is on the other side, adjacent to South Orange. On the other side, you go further, it's Hill, what's it called, I'm ready to say Hillcrest, but Hillcrest, is it Hillcrest? What is it? I forget. On your way to Newark, there's another community there where Shlomo Carbach's twin brother was rabbi. Hillcrest is in Queens. Anyway, it's a different name. Name will come to me later. And Newark one time had a very large community of Jews and a very high percentage of Shmirat Shabbat in the 20s into the 30s. The only problem was in Newark, Vic, that as usual, the Rabbanim fought with each other. Vic, you look like the buses knocked the heck out of you. I
2 hours.
2 hours to get here.
I'm not doing it anymore.
No, I, he looks exhausted.
I mean, really, in this country, the Arabs are running the country, not the Jews.
How did the Arabs come into your situation?
Because, you know, the super bus.
Yeah.
90% of the drivers are all Arabs.
Right, they're Arabs, but
And the Arabs are younger.
Ah, they didn't have enough drivers. Oh,
but they just stop. They won't stop. They just keep on going.
You have to file a complaint. It's a Jewish company.
The Arabs.
My heart goes
they're
out to
the only
to
ones
you.
Who could help.
Wow, wow, wow.
You got to tell the leftists that they don't realize who's their boss.
Yeah. Sad. Okay, anyway, let's come back here and try to liven up the class, because we're right now, there was big machlokes in Newark. There was between the Rabbanim, the Yudapayish Rabbanim, and unfortunately the next generation went conservative, the generation after that reform, and it's sad only a handful of families remained from by the time we came on the scene there in 1962. One of them was my own Talmud, Herbie Maltz, who just passed away a few weeks ago, Zeichet Tzadik Livracha. Now, the Schwartz boys grew up in Newark, and there was no yeshiva there. They went to public school, Talmud Torah. They studied with one of the Rabbanim, Rabbi Mendelssohn. He was one of the Rabbanim. And I actually taught his grandchildren in the Kollel years ago. Many descendants live in Israel. And later, as teenagers, they arrived at Yeshivat Rabbeinu Yitzchok Chanan, which you call YU today, and they were very brilliant. The one that was heads and shoulders above everyone else was Gedalia or George Schwartz. And he went on, had a number of rabbinic positions, including Young Israel of Borough Park. And the RCA, you see, it's a whole history that, again, I'm throwing out topics for doctoral theses. Someone should do on the history of the Beitin of America. What begins as follows is that the yeshiva had one YU, what we call YU, coming back to the 30s into the 40s, it had one Rosh Yeshiva who knew how to paskin, Shailas Halacha Lamaisa, and he was Hungarian, Rabbi Shmuel Gerstenfeld, Rabbi Shmuel Gerstenfeld, Samuel Gerstenfeld. He was Hungarian, Unungarish Talmud Chacham, Bucky in Shas and Paiskim, and Zev, he went on to become a Rav in England. And being a Rav, halacha l'maisa, he had to do Gittin, he had to do Chalitza, and he mastered English. And he taught it at what today is YU. Now, the other Rabbeim, he was an oddball. What do I mean by that? The whole faculty was Litvish, basically. And as those of you who have studied me over the decades, you all know I have proven 1,000 times over that Reb Chaim established a new way of learning, but he destroyed all Psak Halacha, because when you see things Shnei Dinim, there's always two ways to go, you got to give an answer, black and white. So the Litvish Yeshiva established special Koilelim, Reb Yaakov Kamnetsky learned in the Slabatkul Koilel, for halacha, that they taught how to paskin to be a rav. So Rav Gerstenfeld, he was the one. People came to yeshiva, they needed a get. Rav Gerstenfeld set up a beitin. They had to do chlitza. Rav Gerstenfeld had a chalitza shul and set up a beit din. And that's how the RCA beit din began. It was not RCA yet. It was at YU. When Rav Gerstenfeld died, Rav Yosef Weiss took over the beit din. Why Rav Yosef Weiss? Rav Yosef Weiss also was an ungarisha. And he had wide bekiyut, and he knew you had, as much as he was devoted to the Soloveitchik family, Rav Meisher and the Rav, but halacha l'maisa. But it became too big for him, meaning he was a Rebbe in YU. He was later the Rav's assistant, the Rebbe in YU. RCA, that's how they form a beis din. And they also had an ungarisha Rav Scheinberg, was the Av beit din. He too was an ungarisha from ungarisha Rabbanim, his father, grandfather, the Marse Avraham, etc., etc. And he created the beit din into a formal institution. When he died, Rabbi Schwartz ultimately becomes the Av Beit Din. Rabbi Willick is involved, others are involved, Melech Shechter is involved, Rav Heschel's father, but ultimately Rav Schwartz becomes the key person. He then is already in Chicago, and the RCA Beit Din, its heartbeat moves to Chicago, where Mark was already, I can't say he's a native Chicagoan, but he was living there already. And Rav Gedalia Schwartz becomes the posek for the RCA. Today it's Rav Yonah Reese, who did Shemesh in the Beit Din many years, and he's also a fabulous individual. We're blessed that we have individuals like this. And Rav Gedalia Schwartz, he was the address for everyone. Any problem an RCA rabbi had, you turn to Rav Gedalia Schwartz. And he was, again, Rav Gedalia Schwartz, to know him, the Menschlichkeit. Am I describing him? The Menschlichkeit, that's the best word I could use. He didn't lose his temper, he didn't get angry, he didn't yell, he didn't shout, he understood, he had mitleid. And you see what helps someone, where the Rav was different, dear, and I hope maybe one of the lecturers is going to speak about this, where the Rav was different than the other Gedolei Yisrael. I mean, people make up stories today that Rav Aaron Cutler yelled at the Rav, etc. People ask me, they don't know what they're talking about. The Rav, Rav Yaakov, Rav Moshe, Rav Aaron Cutler, even Rav Huttner, put them all. But where the Rav was different, he was an American rabbi. You see, when he came to Boston in 32, he was introduced to a world, no Shabbat, no Kashrut, no concern, and old-time Jews who were Shomer Shabbos but didn't give a hoot about tomorrow. And he suffered in America, but he learned the American scene backwards and forwards. And that helped the Rav become the Rav. This is RCA, this is YU, this is OU, this is Young Israel. And the Rav, he was part of it. He used to say at the RCA conventions, your problems are my problems. And everyone understood what he meant. That these problems you come up with, Geirut, Mamzeirut, I mean, what you have in America. And of course, the Rav had the same thing in Boston. Now, Rav Gedalia Schwartz, because of his experience as an American rabbi, was fine-tuned to the questions that he would receive. A year ago, they came out with a volume. Rav Schwartz was the editor of Hadarom, which is the rabbinic journal put out by RCA from time immemorial. The issue of Hadarom 2022, Choveret Ayin Vav 76, is dedicated to the memory Sefer Zikaron Liuli Nishmat Harav Gedalia Dov Schwartz. And here he has, I'll give you the source, Siman Dalad. And B'inyan Miniyat Isha L'Nesiyah Shel Beit HaKnesset. This was a case that broke out in America that shook the world in the United States. I remember here in Israel, the fallout. Who's active in the shul today? Look around shuls. When I was growing up, there was a joke they told that the Chassidic Rebbe went around with two women, two gabayisters in Yiddish. And they asked him, Rebbe, vidas pastva, Rebbe, how do you say this in English? Is it fitting for a Rebbe that you have two women going around? He says, in Europe, I only had gabayim. But in America, if you want to get anything done, you have to have gabayisters. And there are reasons why. Men got involved making a living, men, two jobs, right? There can be many reasons why. Who gets involved in running a shul? And I don't have to tell you, if I wanted anything done in Maplewood, South Orange, it was the sisterhood, not the brotherhood. It used to be called the sister...
Men's club.
It used to be called the sister, ladies' auxiliary and the men's club. And later, it became very fancy terms, sisterhood, brotherhood. So I know the sisterhood was very active. Ah, now the question is, you see, as time marches on, my mother-in-law was like unique. A lady born, I don't know, 1908, 1906, that era, she went to normal college, it was called. You know what normal college was? Teacher's training. A woman who, what woman went to college? A woman's role in life, to be a teacher. All right. Most of the teachers in the New York public school were Jewish. How did I wind up in yeshiva? You all know the story. For first grade, the teacher sends my mother time and again, your son is wild. And finally, Mr. Leray, and she was a Sephardic Jew, a Spanish-Portuguese Jew. I didn't know that at all. But she tells my mother, look, this class, you Italians, Irish, and a few Jewish says, your son is too smart. What he learns in a half hour takes them a week to learn. She says, you should send him, there's a yeshiva parochial school 5 blocks away. It was the only yeshiva in the Bronx, Solanta, that began in Harlem. And my mother hears dual curriculum, and she went to Torah Mesorah, I'd like to enroll my son. And she says, but my husband's a postman, we have very limited income. And they made a deal with my mother that $5 a month. All right, I hope you will agree that Klal Yisrael got paid back properly for being a kid for $5 a month. Mark, you don't have to answer because they'll say you're prejudiced. You've been my comment so many times. Who here, everyone? What do you say, Zev? A deal or not? So you see, Rabbi Schwartz, this question, women, time marches on. Today, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 50, women are coming out of the ghetto. Central High School for Girls, Beis Yaakov, Stern College for Women, and many of my students who I taught in Mechola went back, they went to Barnard. Like, Stern College, not a high enough level, Barnard. Take Bernard Revel Graduate School. In my time, there was one woman in Bernard Revel Graduate School. Today, I'm told the majority of students in BRGS are women. Are women. Take a look in Israel. A lady whose parents I know, I knew the father very well, Zichrono Livracha, Rabbi Dov Zlatik, She did a doctorate on Bar Ilan. What a doctorate. On the furniture at the time of Chazal. The clay buyer. The furniture. Brilliant. So now you have a woman that can do all this. I go to a doctor. It's a woman. It's my doctor. My student, that dermatologist. My student. Neurologist. Sister of a student. Etc. They want to be in. So I'll tell you. What I heard, this problem didn't come up yet when I was in the rabbinate. But certainly by the late 60s, the 70s, when I'm in Israel already, problem came up. I heard that the Rav Paskind as follows. And there are various versions. I can now tell you what I heard from Manny Holsa. And if you have a different version, fine. What I heard from Manny was the Rav said that to be secretary or treasurer, that is not a problem. But vice president or president, that the Rav was not happy with. Now, why wasn't he happy? So one version is Srara. The version that I heard, and to me personally makes much more sense, is that a vice president or a president have to make announcements in shul. And it's not within the Kedushat Beit Knesset that in the middle of davening, towards the end of davening, a woman gets up and makes the announcements. And that speaks to me. That's why I have a lot of problems. I was in a shul in Riverdale, a scholar in residence, and a woman gets up at the end. Davening isn't over. Your mind is still clear, pure. B'tara, b'kedusha, and she's making announcements, and everyone's looking at her. All right, to me, I have the version, it was not Srara, but the announcements that bothered the Rav. But now, here is a question, 1989, that is forwarded from Rabbi Yisrael Wagner, who's very active, that's a Rav in Queens. I taught his daughter. Rabbi Wagner was a Shein Dover and a Talmud Chacham. And the RCA, the question now comes up. A woman president. The Balabatim want a woman president. Now, what's your problem, Yomo? You're shaking your hands.
Who says that the president, vice president, has to give announcements?
Part of being a president. No. So you're saying let them be president. Halacha lemaisa, when a woman or a man is president, vice president, it involves announcements. I can still remember, I can tell you a story from my youth. I still remember a young Israel where the Rav was a Yerupeish Rav, a Talmud Chacham. His daughter was a good friend of my wife. One of the few Shemesh Shabbos, real Shemesh Shabbos families in the Bronx. And one time I davened, I don't remember the occasion or why, I remember I davened there Shabbos morning, and here's a Rav with a long beard and wearing rabbinic garb, and the president gets up and he's making an announcement, and in the middle of the announcement he brings in Marilyn Monroe, and everyone is laughing, and the poor rabbi, I don't know if he understood it, didn't understand, but he's sitting there with a very serious face. Very embarrassing, that's all I can say. And I had that, you should know I had that in Maplewood. Lower Marion Synagogue. I think it was one of the last drushot I ever gave. I'm digressing for 1 minute now. I gave a talk on Pashat Mishpatim, and I spoke about Shifcha Kananit, and how an Eved Ivri is allowed to marry a Shifcha Kananit. And I said over what from the Altar of Slabodka that I heard from my Mashgiach, my Rebbe, Rav Lessin, and the degradation of the human being, if you can rob and steal an Eved Ivri, God says, all right, you have lost your full Jewish dignity, you can marry a Shifcha Kananit. And someone yells out from the audience, Marilyn Monroe! And everyone breaks into laughter. At that moment, I made up my mind, no more preaching. And it was one of, it changed my whole life. But then I put up an announcement that the pulpit belongs to the rabbi, but I then decided not to give sermons, but to give educational lectures. And I began a series on Gedolei Yisrael in America. I still have the notes of Moshe Feinstein, the Baron Cutler, etc. Do you know people walked from miles around to hear those shayurim, lectures, sermons, call it what you wish. And even those who opposed the rabbi, his fanaticisms, but they admitted, he knows how to teach, Baruch Hashem. Anyway, coming back here, what's interesting about Rav Schwartz's tshuva, and it's about three pages, four pages of material, fascinating. What's interesting is he touches upon a problem that you should know. This problem existed 100 years ago, and I'll tell you something which I said years ago, and it's still being, if you read the books, everyone, I see it time and again, it's the greatest mistake we ever made. Meaning, tell me, the state of Israel, you begin, the Jews want to be represented. A Jewish agency is organized by the, accepted by the British government, and already beginning in the early 1920s, we have official representation for the Jewish people. Now you got to vote leaders. Who's going to lead us? Can women vote? And this machloket began. Rav Kook asked women voting. It's a long tshuva, Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, on this. Can women be candidates? There were rabbanim who said women can be candidates, but women can't vote. Rav Uziel was the main rav who said women can be candidates and women can vote, and they all wrote tshuva. Now, this was a tragic mistake. Why, Elliot? Because the Jewish agency represents the people. It's a result of what I spoke about Friday morning in Beit Shemesh, Aliyah Bet, 1904-1914. They made decisions that affect the air that we breathe in Israel until today. Israel, a democratic country of nebulous Jewish origins. This is Israel. This is the big fight going on. Are we to become a Jewish state in a democratic framework, or a democratic country of nebulous Jewish origins? There's a tremendous battle going on. The majority is with a Jewish state. But it's just amazing how these people have said, we don't believe in democracy, you're a bunch of idiots, people like Rakefer are half-wits. I've been told, I told, entertain people with stories on Shabbos. I was once in a cab coming from the airport, and this lady accuses me of killing Rabin. It was a crisis. I killed Rabin. I said I would shoot the people, I would execute anyone who killed Rabin, if you ask me. I'm a Jew, I believe in Torah. Oh my gosh, I said. And then she got high. I said to her, where do you, where do you live? As usual, I said, the Arabs want you living on stolen land. The Arabs claim it's theirs. What are you rebuking me for? She said, God, the hatred, the enmity. But had the women voted, imagine if Rav Kook would have said, it is a holy obligation for every woman to vote for the religious parties, for the Jewish agency to be led by Shomrei Shabbos B'nai Torah, would have been an, people say, would have been an entirely different Israel. It's a tragic, tragic error. And you see today, Agudat Yisrael, every woman, get out, vote. Mizrahi, we're led by women. The greatest, I love them. These women open their mouths. Wow, nothing holds them back. Terrific. Wow. So he begins. He begins by quoting the Machlokes, by quoting Rav Kook, by quoting Rav Uziel, and he explains that it was a whole basic question. Shezehu neged chatzniut, sheisha asuka binyanei tziba, tzibur v'kol, and you get involved, melech v'lo malka, all the sources we're talking about. And you see, this is the whole shift in woman's status. Where do we stand? What is a woman? Kvod bat melech penima, what does that mean? Can she leave the house? Can't she leave the house? Zev, have you studied the Rambam and Hilchat Ishut? How often is a woman allowed to leave the house each month? Twice. It's the Rambam. Rakefet says, you know why twice? Because the first time there was a shaylu with chatzitz in the mikvah, so she has to go back and be tovelet again. No, Elliot, your wife leaves the house once a month, twice a month? Understand? Change, good, bad, what can we accept? This is what we're struggling with. And this is exactly the she'ela that Rav Schwartz got. And then he goes into the whole tshuva of Rav Moshe, of a mashgicha kashrut. And this whole question, the Rambam, Rav Moshe, the woman, and he too cites the whole etzah that Rav Moshe gave. She is an employee of the rabbi. And once you say that, the whole problem is solved. But nevertheless, melech v'lo malka, president of the shul, and then Rav Gedalia cites Rav Amzal. And here I have to go elaborate 1 second. If you recall last week we mentioned Rav Meir Amzal, also an Ungarische, a Hungarian, and he took issue with Rav Moshe. And he said, Melech v'lo Malka. Rav Moshe says, Melech v'lo Malka, but how does that involve any other position of authority? And here, Rav Gedalia Schwartz cites Rav Amzal, later publishes that he found in a Psikta Zutrata Pashat Shoftim, he found another Midrashic source where it says, quote, Ish velo isha mikan she'ein memanin isha panasa al hatzibur. That is not just melech velo malka, but a woman cannot be a panasa al hatzibur. A man can be a panes, and a woman, no, authority, public figure, tzniut. You'll see all the source. He quotes Rav Amzal. Rav Moshe never saw this, what we would call a favofen medrash, a minor medrash, but a medrash nevertheless. And if this is the case, it adds fire to the question. President? Absolutely not. Panes, panasa, woman, public figure. Well, this is a fascinating question. Where do we have it in Israel today, Mark? The Haredi world. You think only we suffer? You have a son, Haredi, right or wrong. His wife supports him. His son sits and learns. Terrific. Hey, wait a minute. Your daughter-in-law works. She goes outside the house. She's successful. She's competent. She makes more in a month than Rekafit makes in a year. Right or wrong? Let's give credit. My daughters. Well, one second. Why can't she run for the Knesset? You with me? Yes, Sev?
The question when you said that the Rav, it could be that the Rav is based on either Svara or on that it's not befitting for the Kedusha of the Knesset,
right.
For a woman president because you make an announcement.
Right.
The idea of Svara, is this the very Svara that...
The Rav
could be based on?
The Rav felt that it's an infringement of Kedushat Beit HaKnesset that a woman should get up and speak in public in front of the Aron Kodesh. And the Rav felt that way as well with Hakafat, women Hakafat.
Okay, but the side of Svara, what do you mean by that?
Svara?
Yeah.
The thinking. The thinking behind it, the reason. Where does it come from?
Yes.
Mechitza. Asher Shir Moshe Bnei Yisrael and Vatetzimirim Vahanashim. It's separate from the time you became a community. We're separate. But if you want to know the Rav's feelings, again, I've lectured on this decades ago. There's a book put out by Baruch Litwin, Sanctity of the Synagogue. See if you can get it. It was put out, there were a few editions, and there you have the Rav's testimony in court where there was a question of taking down the machitza. And you'll see the way he thinks, why davening there has to be separation, and there's sexual tension in life. Davening, we want to minimize it. We're talking to God.
Did the Rav have access to this midrash?
Mori Rebbe, when you say the Rebbe, Mori Rebbe, I doubt it. I doubt it. This was a Favaf and a Medish. Rav Moshe didn't have it either. You follow? But Rav Amzel came up with it. I don't know. It has to be checked out in Rabbi Kasha's work. Okay. Yeah, yes. Thank you. Yes, Yoma, I can go further? Okay. Yashikayach. Okay. So, you see, the Rav... Let me come back. Rabbi Schwartz, it's the president, the image, the change in the culture. Where do we draw the line? How much can we accept? How much can we say is part of Torah? How much is a reflection of the outside society? Remember the Gemara in Sota. Kol hamalamedet bitol Torah ki'ila linda. Tiflet. You teach your daughter Torah. What does that mean? You're teaching her miscreant behavior. And again, it's a reflection of society. Women had no education then. They got married at 14, 13. They had children at 15. There was no time to do anything. Women had to churn the butter, bake the bread. Today you live in a world, you go into the supermarket, you spend 200 shekel, you have enough food ready on the shelf, in the refrigerator, in the freezer, in the microwave. You don't have to do anything for the next week, the next 2 weeks. It's a different world. The woman is working, supporting. Look at the Haredi world. Now, and I want you to know, this is a problem, the Haredi world. Those of you living in Israel, and all of you live here, and all of you know the undertones, Shas, there are women who want to be represented in the Knesset. Why only the Mizrahi women? Agudat Yisrael, you already have an Aguda. You have Hasidic women. Where are they? They're not leaving the Hasidic path. But we want to be in the Knesset. You got Rakefik cracking jokes that if he had the way, only women would be allowed in the Knesset. Because men have to learn Torah, remember? Men have to sit and learn, how do you waste time in the Knesset? But women can be in the Knesset, Baruch Hashem. So you see, on the other hand, and here's where Rav Schwartz is probably influenced by the Rav. Because the Rav was adamant, Kedushat Beit HaKnesset cannot be interfered with. And I know this as a fact from Rabbi Muskin, of Century, Young Israel of Century City in Los Angeles, a YU graduate out of the 70s, and a very fine rabbi. If you ever want to see, he comes from a rabbinic family, his father, his grandfather, etc. But if you ever want to see a proper rav, how he conducts himself, that's Rabbi Muskin. So I think it was his mother or his grandmother asked the rav, and they were very close to the rav. It's from his, I think from his wife's side, from Maria, and about women dancing with the Sefer Torah, and the rav was very opposed. And he said, nothing to do with women lifting at Sefer Torah, but we never had this in a Beit Knesset. It's an infringement on Kedushat Beit HaKnesset. I've had the Shaila Halacha L'maisa. I paskin, again, you have to know the circumstances, but I always tell a Talmud of mine, or a Rav who asked me, you don't lose your position over women dancing with the Torah. What you should do is have them dance elsewhere, like not in the Beit Knesset. That would be the ideal. But if you can't do that, then at least it should be totally separated by a mechitza. The women on one side, the men on another. But the Rav was very, he wouldn't agree with my psak. But all right, I'm living with the reality of the women PhDs learning Yoatzat Halacha, etc., etc. Okay, now, so he ends off that, And you'll see the quotes, the Chavajaya, etc. He ends off, look, if we start to break down Minhagim, there's no end to how much we'll be broken down. And Minhag Yisrael, women were never presidents of shuls. And once this becomes public, people will take the attitude that customs don't count. You can break down, let it be dissipated. Custom is not that important. And if this is the case, he ends off lefi kol hanoma le'il, kiven de yesh habei ta'amim le'asa minui isha liyot nesiyah bebeit Knesset. Yesh limchot v'limnoa dava zeh. V'kei nireli halacha l'ma'aseh. Ah, wow. Mark, this is out of the late 80s. Check out if there's any further discussion in RCA on this topic. Very fascinating. But Rav Schwartz, Asas, does not permit it. Halacha L'maisa comes down negatively. I know there was a case, and Mark, you can check it out, a Young Israel, upstate New York, if I'm not mistaken, where they elected a woman president. And the National Council of Young Israel was very upset. There was an attempt to end their membership, cancel their membership. And on the other hand, the Young Israel stood firm and said, we have no man who has the time and energy to devote. And this woman is fabulous. And under her guidance, the synagogue will be alive and kicking, producing, doing. We don't have a man who can do this. So I'm curious to see what ultimately happened there. As I recall, they stood their ground. But we're living these questions where we're struggling and suffering, if I can use that terminology. And here I'll come one step further, something I told you about in class, and Rabbi Grinstein, I have to laugh. I'm a Talmud Ne'eman L'Rabbo. My thinking exactly like the Rav, but the world is against us. Minna. Remember I told you the story, my grandson is getting married. He's marrying a girl, wonderful lady, I should say. Wonderful lady from a left-wing Mizrahi family, Torah V'Avodah. You know what I'm talking about. They're not, I'm not in their camp. But I understand them very well, and certain issues, I agree with them thoroughly. Believe me, they're going to be very happy with what I've just published and what will soon be published. Baruch atah Adonai Melech Olam she'hakol nihyeh bedvaro. And her mother asks me to have them read the abbreviated ketuvah in Hebrew. And what do I answer her mother? That I'm a Talmud of the Rav, and the Rav wouldn't approve. I have to read the ketuvah, the Aramaic, the entire ketuvah. And Tova Lichtenstein was just interviewed by Jeffrey Sachs, by Rabbi Sachs, the editor of Tradition. He writes wonderfully, golden pen, very knowledgeable. And Rabbi Sachs and Tova, they're talking about this very topic. And Tova says, the world doesn't really follow my father anymore. My father would be very opposed to reading an abbreviated Hebrew ketuvah. Tradition, a regular ketuvah. On the other hand, I told you, I then have another reading of a grandson. I'm being Masoretic edition. And no one asked me. And this family already is more centrist, more right-wing Mizrahi. And they're Machabed. I don't know exactly what the relationship. I think it was my grandson's Rav at the Technion in Haifa when he was a student there. They were both students there. That's where the couple met in the shul of the Technion. And a Rav with a long beard. He looks like, not like I look like an Oisvaf, a Trumpenik, a Shagitz. This is a real rabbi. And he's Chabadim with the... He reads the abbreviated Hebrew Ketuvah. And Tova's saying the same thing, that with all the respect for my father, and he, tradition was so important. And this is Rav Schwartz's answer. Okay, let me just go one step further. But I want to show you something from the past. Let me just see that I have it. Yeah. I want to pick up from here Mishnah Halachot, Chelek Yud Zayin, Siman Reish Nun Bet. I repeat, 17th volume, Siman 252, Reish Nun Bet. And, okay. Now, tell me, we're discussing women Mashgichot Kasher. We're discussing women voting. By the way, in the topic of women voting, there's a world of material. Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg has a long tshuva, and there's other material, a world of material, right? So it's more or less on the Israeli scene and on the American scene, the issue has been solved. Everyone agrees women should vote, and when we look back 100 years, it was a tragic era, women not to vote. It would have been a different Jewish agency, and it would have been a different Israel. It would have been a different Israel, because at that time, the opposition to a Jewish state was not like today. They also wanted a Jewish state, but to them, democratic, liberal, was equally important. Today, these people who talk democracy and liberality, they have no concept of what a Jewish state is. It's a very nebulous concept. Imagine Chametz on Pesach becomes an issue. It's still an issue. People walked into hospitals with bread. I mean, it's beyond comprehension. And it's not halachic. Remember, I'm not an Amoritz. I couldn't get over this. Some people think you can't look at Chametz. Lo bal yirav, bal yimatzeh means if it belongs to you. But if it doesn't belong to you, you can look at chametz all day. When I was a kid, I didn't know much. Maybe I was 7, 8 years old, and I would be afraid to walk past the Safeway or an AMP. They have bread in the window. You can't look at it Pesach. Today, I know you can look at it day and night. It's not yours. It's a good You follow me? But to me, chametz, it's a Jewish value. Pesach, we have to respect that we don't bring chametz into a hospital. People are there against their will, sick, who are kosher Jews. Why should they worry that in the bed next to me someone is eating chametz? It upsets me. Let me just go one second further, then I want to show you an amazing little story that should open your minds to everything we've spoken about since 1978. The problem goes one step further today. Mark, you have a granddaughter living here? Tell me, two granddaughters. Who should they serve in the army? Should they serve in the army? You have a different problem. Will your grandson serve in the army? Follow me? Unless the Haredi world wakes up and becomes frum and not reform Jews. But it's a real question. I alluded to it Friday morning, right or wrong. Tell me, girls in the army. I have one daughter, a lawyer, a rabbinic lawyer as well. One daughter, an advanced degree, special education. Another daughter's advanced degree, very unique degree, an art therapist. What's going to be my granddaughters? One PhD, one MD after another. My great-granddaughters, what if they say to me, why can't we serve in the army? We can get PhDs, we can get MDs. You follow, it's the same issue. Taking on a whole Israeli context. Believe me, in Muncie, no one asked you about serving in the army. Right or wrong? But here in Israel, a whole new context. Can they, can't they, what can they do? All right, we'll talk about that next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. And it doesn't end with next week. We're living it. This is an ongoing issue. What do we arrive at? Where do we stand? An ongoing issue. I just want to go backwards in time because I think this document is unique. I have a substitute, Rabbi Akiva Males. He's rabbi of the Young Israel in Memphis. And all of you know the Young Israel of Memphis, there was a great rabbi, in Memphis, Tennessee, Harav Nutta Greenblatt. I think it was the uncle of Rabbi Ephraim Greenblatt, who was more well-known because he published Rabbi Avot Ephraim, but his uncle lived longer, so, you know, interesting. He was there since 1949, Rabbi Greenblatt. And Rabbi Akiva Males writes that you still feel his absence. He was active almost to the day he died in his early 90s. And tells the following story. He was visiting Rabbi Nutter 5-6 years ago. And they were talking about the small pockets of Jewish entrepreneurs who were once scattered across the American South. And he told me the following story. In the early 1970s, a Jewish couple who belonged to an Orthodox synagogue and knew Rabbi Greenblatt, but they were not, you know, really frum or really knowledgeable, but they did know something already. They visited the Greenblatts to share their joyous news. Their daughter had become engaged to a nice Jewish boy. And these people were overjoyed. The Greenblatts were overjoyed. These were their friends, their congregants. And Rabbi Nutter says, listen what happened next. A few days later, he gets a call from the bride's mother. She sounds distraught. And she says, I must speak to you, Rabbi. She comes, and she says, look, my husband knows nothing about this, but from the little I've learned, I think I have a real problem. And she breaks down and cries and tells him about her own personal history. And she had grown up in a small town in a nearby state where her hardworking parents had identified a business opportunity, set up a shop. They tried their best to raise their kids with a feeling for Judaism, but they could barely succeed. They had a minyan, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. They couldn't afford a rabbi. There was one fellow in the shul who was more Jewishly literate than anyone else, and this gentleman who was a businessman, but he also assumed the title of reverend and filled in the gap for rabbinic functions. When she was just 16 or 17 years old, I was running around with another Jewish boy in our small community. The reverend found out, and he called us in and said, look, it's not nice. You know, in those days, premarital relations were looked down upon. It's not today that we've lost the whole concept outside of the Torah world of what marriage is about and what Eshet Nurim is about. It's sickening to think this. They've lost one of the most beautiful aspects of life. Eshet Nurim doesn't exist today, except for us, Baruch Hashem. So he said, you should get married. And she was 17. At that time, you could marry at 17. Today, the age is 18 in most states in America. And they got married, lasted a few years, but they realized they're too young, they're not serious, they don't know how to establish a relationship, and they went their separate ways, got a divorce. A few years later, she relocated this lady in Memphis, met a wonderful Jewish young man, dated for a while. She knew this was Mr. Right. They married, have a family, their daughter. And Rabbi Greenblatt, she said, I never got a get. I was married and I never got a get from the first man, the 17, 18-year-old boy. This daughter is from her second marriage. Second marriage was also a Jewish marriage. No one knew she had been married before. There's no questions asked. And, no, what do you say, Zev? The daughter from her second marriage, if she never got a get, she's a mamzeret. It's an adulterous relationship. So you see, you get this question. I've had questions like this, every rabbi has. I've paskened for others. Rabbi Nutter looked up the reverend, the family, the community. He was no longer alive, but he did have a daughter married in the same community, inherited his business, and he contacted her and said he was a rabbi, and he's also interested in the history of the South. He'd like to interview her. He heard about her father. She was very happy. He traveled, came in, sat down, and he started asking her questions, talking with her, and she said, yeah, I grew up, there were no really religious Jews here. My father wasn't that religious, but he knew from his youth, he had the background evidently from Europe, and he became the reverend. He did the marriages, he performed the funerals, and there were no religious Jews. Not possible, no, there were no religious Jews. You know what he's asking, Natan? Adam, that you can't possibly have an aid. And she says, who married you? And she said, oh, my father. Did you have a ketuvah? And she brings out the ketuvah, and guess who one of the Eidim on the ketuvah is? Her own father. You follow? The reverend. He He's an aide with someone else signing the ketuvah. So he says, oh, very fascinating. Would you mind if I photocopy this? And he photocopied. Oh, she was overjoyed, you know, for his research, for his paper. And then he goes back home. First thing he does, he goes to New York to his Rebbe, to Rav Moshe Feinstein. Didn't want to paskin on his own. It's a din of Eish Tish. And of course, Rav Moshe paskin, that no problem. The first marriage is never chal. There's no Eidim, no Shomrei Shabbat. Imagine the Reverend signs the ketuvah as an aid of his own daughter. And he's mat there and he calls the lady immediately. You have nothing to worry about. Your daughter can get married. The covet or the tiferet. I checked with one of the greatest rabbanim alive. And he gave this psak. He agrees with my research. And wow, what this rabbi accomplished. Now, you see, this is part of the rabbinate. The last talk I ever gave, that Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein and I were together, and he was in the audience, and whatever the without Zev, without boring you with the talk, it was in this very room, and Rabbi Aaron hugged me when it was over. And I don't want to repeat his words to me. Baruch Hashem. So you know what I spoke about? The role of a rabbi. I write about this in my work on the Rav. When the Rav tells the story that the question was asked, what is the role of a rabbi? And his family had many rabbanim. The Aruch HaShulchan said, Tapaskin Ashaila. Rav Chaim said, Gemilat Chesed. That's the role of a rabbi. To do good. To help others. And you see, this rabbi, Rabbi Nutter Greenblatt, he hears the story. Look at the way he responds. Shoots into action. Traces his own feelings, because he knew there was no Yiddishkeit in this part of the South. But who knows how he comes up with a story. He's researching history. He's interested. An article. And he uncovers the ketuvah. And I don't know. I wouldn't have gone to Rav Moshe. I think it's black and white because you have Rav Moshe's published tshuva already. But all right. Rav Moshe says, Rebbe, he didn't feel comfortable giving a psak on such a delicate, important issue, eshetish mamzeret, without the approbation of Rav Moshe. And I want to thank Rabbi Mails. I know what the rabbinate is like, and I can tell you how I ended off my lecture at that time. Right here in this room, it's the last Shabbat, Malka and I and Tova and Aaron, we were all together. It's years ago already, you know. The Baron is gone and we're all older. So lo pashut, you don't have the energy, that ability. There's going to be a big demonstration this week at the Knesset. Those who don't want their democracy to be robbed from them, people like myself who voted for giving back authority to the people, not to 15 members of the Supreme Court, etc. And by the way, people say to me, we want to be like America. So Talmidah says to me, but in America there's a constitution. We also have a constitution, the Torah. What are we going to do wrong? In America with the constitution, they're killing youngsters today. A girl of 18 says, I'm a boy. They operate on her. 5 years later, she's crying, my life is ruined. A man declares himself a lady, and he participates in sports events, and the transgenders win it all. But you can't top Rikers Island. Some guy there declared himself a lady, so he goes to sleep with the women. Two women became pregnant. Rikers Island, right now, you can check it out. That's a constitution? We have the Torah. We're not going to do something terrible. We're limited. We live with Torah Hashem Tamima. And wow, it's beyond words what's going on. But I had an incident which I write about in Washington, and Rabbi Avadia Yosef writes a long tshuva. I believe it appears in Yud Aleph of Yabia Omer. It's all my thinking out of the Kotel. So I was matir and aguna from Russia. But I tell the story that people asked me, how are you related to her? Reisha, I don't want to give her last name. I hope she's alive yet. How are you related? I looked at them. In other words, the question was, a rabbi helps someone only if he's related. Wait a minute. I'm helping her because I'm a Jew and I have knowledge and I can help a fellow Jew and I can do a gemilat chesed. Eile devarim shein lechem sheyur. Right or wrong? Adam ol cheper etein bel mezeva karen kayemet lolam haba. And I have to end off and admit that driving home the other day from Talpiyot, I think I was shopping, and I'm coming home, and people want to turn into traffic. My greatest joy is to stop and wave them in. And if they wave back to me, you don't know how good I feel. A simple gemilat chesed. And by the way, I've always been like that. And I can tell you, in Newark, driving Rabbi Maplewood with a clergy sign, I'd stop with somebody, and the car overtakes me, I don't want to repeat his words, dash the rabbi, the heck with you clergy. He was mad at me that I waved someone in ahead of me and held them up for a split second. So my dear students, first of all, I want to thank Vic for coming. I feel so bad, Vic. You have no idea. I wish I had a solution, because I love seeing you smile. And we don't have a car anymore. Once, but that car, you were afraid he was a wild driver. So we can't win no matter what we do. But I want to thank everyone for, well, we have as many people here now as we had last Monday. Monday we generally get more. And I want to thank you for your participation. What did we do today? First of all, we went further with Reb Moshe, with the Ger, with the president, and next week we'll go a step further with the army. And it'll be halacha l'maisa. I have to be honest with you, I'm going to paskin halacha l'maisa what I think. Do people listen to me? No, not necessarily, but at least you have a framework to take further. Tomorrow Be'ezrat Hashem at 9 o'clock, we're going to finish out Daf Yomi. We're going to come back to Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin. Very fascinating, and I'm happy to say that I'll be bringing back Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin again. If I go through with the publication, it'll be in Chakira. My problem is I submitted the article half-heartedly, essay, book I should say, figuring no one will publish it because it's 161 pages. It'll wait till Rakaf Aran Chelek Hei. But they did take it. But Vic, since I spoke with you from the car, I saw the letter from the guy in charge, the copy editor, Rabbi Buchman, I don't know who he is exactly, that they cut out 2,000 plus words. So I wrote him a letter today that I need time to go through it. My Talmidah Evelyn will go through it. We'll see. I got to be sure that they haven't harmed my thinking and my thrust. So if I do publish it, I bring back Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin to life in that letter. Gentlemen, including me again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya, Yomo, open it up to the world. Let's see. One second. Zeb, what we do now, we ask if there are any questions.
Recording stopped.
Okay. Are there, everyone's unmuted?
Yes.
They're supposed to unmute themselves.
You have to unmute yourselves, whatever that means.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
And a question of also women. At a wedding today, Is there a requirement for women to sit separately during the wedding ceremony?
Listen. That question is not only today. It's a question that comes up for over 100 years. Meika Hadin. Obviously, it's not davening. You're not davening. But the minhag Yisrael is to sit separately. Kedushat hamakom, I would say, the fact that they're brachot. But I would answer you very simply, don't make a machloket over it. You follow?
That was the opinion of the Rav.
Yeah, don't make a machloket over it. That's what I would answer. If the people accept it and know, and this is minhag Yisrael, then fine. If the people are going to insist, davka, so I've seen many Rabbanim Masada Kedushin with a mixed audience in front of them. Yeah. Where did this question come up that you're asking?
My grandson is getting married and he asked me about this.
And will he listen if you say yes?
He will listen.
Okay, so I would tell him, minhag Yisrael is that even though it's not davening, but since they're brachot involved, that we sit separately.
If, what about during the wedding, the meal?
I can only tell you that two of my daughters was totally mixed. One wedding was a conservative synagogue. Men, women, and mixed. I can tell you that Rebbetzin, Sipora, Koopman walked up and down, writing down the names of the faculty members of Michalach who were sitting with their wives. I can also tell you that Rabban Soloveitchik was asked by Jay Marcus. There was a family wedding, and Jay's brother, who's no longer with us, Rafi Marcus, who I loved, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha. So Rafi was Rabban's son-in-law. So the Lich Soloveitchiks would be invited to the wedding. And Jay said, Rebbe, we have some Chassidic Rebbeim coming there sitting separate. Would you want to sit with them or with your wife? And Rav Aaron answered him, quote, I love my wife and I want to sit with her, end quote. But it's up, you know, you got to know the crowd. For me not to sit with my wife, I can't stay at the wedding, plain and simple. To take young people who are not married and sit separately, halavai they should sit together and fall in love and encourage it. But all right, other people, the chassidim sit separately. They sit separately Friday night together. So I can't change the world, but I'm alkein yazavishmei v'davat b'ishto. And chas v'chalila, to sit separate from my wife, I don't know. I can't believe evil thoughts at a wedding, men married. It's beyond my comprehension. And I also, I once had a Yetzer Hara, I would imagine. I wasn't born without a Yetzer Hara. I'm as normal as anyone else, but there has to be Kedusha V'Tahara. And you have to know how to honor your wife, plain and simple. But that's what I can answer you. One son-in-law insisted, you know, shtikel baal tshuva, separate seating. So the compromise was a conservative temple. And it worked out. And my other sons-in-law, right, they accepted me as a Rav Muvhak. And if I said we have to sit mixed, they accepted it. All I can tell you is, until the 60s, you never heard of separate seating at any wedding, including Rav Meisher's weddings and other Gedolei Yisrael. It was the Hasidic world. The first wedding I ever went to where there was separate seating was Louis Feldman's second wedding, when he got married to a lady who was raised by her uncle, a Hasidic Rebbe in Borough Park, Rivka. Her father was a Rebbe, her uncle was a Rebbe, her parents were killed, she was a survivor, her aunt and uncle took her in, and that was the separate seating. Right, so have I answered your question? Yes and no. Okay. Anyone else have a question? Okay. I want to thank everyone for participating, and until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya.